patience.
Well, we would like to use as our opening text Revelation 3:10. It reads, "Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth." Now, the reason we selected this text to open our remarks on patience and to sort of have it serve as the theme of our remarks throughout our comments is, well, it's because of the principles in it. And it's the way these principles were utilized throughout the complete gospel age. Now, our text should not be interpreted to indicate that there was some kind of secret formula that exempted footstep followers from trials and tribulations during the sixth period of the church. Nothing could be more incorrect, because Peter says that fiery trials will try you. And this, of course, has been the lot of every footstep follower since the day of Pentecost. And the brethren living in the Philadelphia period, they had all the trials and temptations like everyone else has had and have. And here we are. We're living in the last period. We're living in the Laodicean period. And we find that the hour of temptation that was designated to transpire in the Philadelphia period, well, it has actually run over into the Laodicean period, and is going to climax in the final phase of the world's time of trouble. Now, in the Laodicean period, no mention is made that exemptions would be given or be made of trials and temptations during this time. Instead, what we're told by the risen Lord is that he would enter in and he would sup with anyone during this period who would hear him knock at their door. And this is what the risen Lord tells us is the reward for anyone who is running the race of patient endurance at the present time. The Lord has entered in and he's supping with us. Now, there are two different Greek words that are translated patience in the New Testament of our Bibles. And it's important that we recognize there are two different conditions that are classified as being patient. Now, the first Greek word is, in the Strong Concordance, number 3115, makronimana. Now, this is the more common way that most everyone, both today and in our Lord's Day, use the word patience. It just means forbearance. It means endurance. It's a show of restraint. Then the second Greek word is number 5281, hoponymi. This word includes all of the above that we just mentioned, as well as an added factor. And that added factor is the factor of experiencing joy in forbearance, of experiencing joy in endurance. And this can only come about if that individual first understands that permission of evil that you're going to be talking about in your first volume study every Sunday for a while. Now, this second Greek word, number 5281, hoponymi, it is what John is identifying in another place, in Revelation 1:9, when he says, "I, John, who also am your brother and companion in tribulation and in the kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, who was in the isle that is called Patmos." Well, John's identifying something here that really very, very few know about, and that is the patience of Jesus Christ. Now, as we said, most people think of patience as forbearance, as endurance, they think of this covering a long period of time. No one ever thinks in terms of experiencing joy in forbearance. The reason being that they first have to understand the permission of evil. Now, Jesus had that understanding in the complete sense of the word. And having this understanding, Jesus never for a moment wanted to detract from or in any way overrule the lives of fallen humanity. Jesus never changed anyone from being alienated from God. You know, they were falling, and he just let them fall. The only individuals that Jesus helped that were the individuals that they themselves wanted to be helped. As free moral agents, they exercise that agency. Now, for such, Jesus showed them the righteous course. He showed them the only course that could be followed by imperfect individuals. Now, as it turned out, that course has led each one that's followed it, has led them to the pearl of great price. But for everyone else, it's been the broad road that leads to destruction. Jesus, in pursuing his course, he was able to endure Pilate's scourgings. He was able to endure everything that came his way. Jesus absorbed such mistreatment because he knew it was God's will for him to patiently endure injustice. The Apostle Paul, not Paul, but the Apostle John's convictions, they were the same. You know, John didn't want to change anything that man was doing or any of the events that were transpiring on earth at that time. But on the other hand, John always had an open mind on understanding God's will as clearly as possible. The formula that was exhibited by Jesus, it was followed by the Apostle John as well. For that matter, this formula has really been followed by every single saint of God since the day of Pentecost. And this formula still continues to be our formula. Right now, right today, we must have the same understanding that Jesus had, because it is only by the process of understanding the permission of evil from God's viewpoint can there be joy in experiencing adversity. Now, it certainly has got to continually be kept in mind that it's impossible to have 5281 type patience, or it's impossible to have hyponymy-type patience. And that's a patience that understands the permission of evil. Well, it's impossible to have this without faith. You know, Abraham, who was such an outstanding example of patience, he could never have been such an example without faith. In fact, he's classified as the father of all that believe. That's Romans 4:11. Abraham believed God. He believed in God. And it was counted unto him for righteousness. Now that happened before Jesus died as a ransom. You know, that all happened before there was a book of laws written of all the do's and the don'ts for obtaining everlasting life. Before all of this, Abraham just had it in his heart that he believed God. And God took hold of Abraham, and he said in Genesis 12:3, "And I will bless them that bless thee, and I will curse him that curse thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Now that right there was a point in time when Abraham became the father of all that believed. He became the father of all that had good hearts. Now, that event was invisible. No one saw it. In fact, no one can see someone else's heart. And because no one else saw what happened to Abraham, something outwardly had to take place in order to indicate what took place inwardly. And because of this, Abraham was required to be circumcised. Now, being circumcised signified the belief that existed in his heart. Now, that outward symbol identified what was inside of him. Now, it was also required that every single male under the law covenant, they should also be circumcised, because they also were supposed to believe God in their hearts. They were supposed to have the very faith of Abraham. Now, Abraham had his belief because of his faith. You know, when God told Abraham that his seed would bless all the families of the earth, Abraham never questioned God's ability to carry out this promise. Abraham was 75 years old when God made that promise. And what was working on Abraham's mind as time was marching on, it was the process by which this was going to get carried out. Now, Abraham was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. Ishmael was Sarah's handmaid's son. He was a legitimate son in Abraham's family. It was all legal and proper. And Abraham was content. He was content in his belief that he was doing what God wanted done. Well, after Ishmael was born, God then became very specific with Abraham. And God said in Genesis 17:19, Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. But Paul said in Romans 4:20, he said that Abraham staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God. And because Abraham staggered not, because of Abraham's faith, he had patience. He was fully persuaded that God would do what God promised he would do. You know, I can just picture Abraham back there before Isaac was born. You know, after Abraham was 86 years old, he was completely undisturbed. Abraham didn't need one more word of instruction. He was content. He was at complete rest. He was certain that everything was going to work out as God wanted it to. Now, that's the condition footstep followers are in when they exercise the patience of Jesus Christ. We are content. We are at complete rest. Now, God hasn't told us how he's going to do many things, but just like in Abraham's case, so also with us. We feel God's will is what is most important. We feel that's most important as long as this keeps getting fulfilled. That's really all that matters. You know, our main concern is to do his will, to do it each day, one day at a time. Now, this is the patience of Jesus Christ. And we feel that one of the best lessons that we have on patience in action, this lesson is found in the 14th chapter of Revelation. Now, I realize that there's great variation in understanding much of the book of Revelation. Yet, you know, there is a greater amount of agreement with much of what's said in it. And I also feel that the first five verses of this 14th chapter belongs to chapter 13. The 14th chapter of Revelation primarily covers the events from 1878 on, or it covers the harvest of the gospel age. Some of the parables of Matthew 13 does the same thing, mainly the parable of the wheat and the tares and the parable of the dragnet. Now, in these two parables, three stages are identified. It is first a gathering, then a bundling, and finally a burning. Well, Revelation 14 talks about the same three parts. An angel is in charge of each part. And after going through what each angel does in each of these three parts, well, then the whole period of time is redescribed a second time. The reason being that the first description is the way the spirit-begotten living during the harvest sees and relates themselves to these three stages. And then the second time that the same angels describe how the same stages. They describe how they. Well, this is the description then as to how this period of time is viewed from the spiritual viewpoint, or how it's viewed from God's viewpoint. You know, most everyone recognizes when the glorified Lord returned and he took hold of the earth. He instantly started the harvest work, and he utilized every single living, spirit-begotten soul to assist him in that gathering work. Now, what was not realized in 1878 was the fact that the generation living at that time would only be doing gathering work. And not only that, they didn't realize that there would be four more generations to follow during this same harvest time. And they also would be doing, or they would be declaring with a loud voice, the gospel. You know, they also would tell of the judgment to come, because that's the way the gathering has taken place. It's a declaration. Come out of her, my people. Now, to declare that this would take place over the period of four generations or more, well, it would have just been out of the question to state this back in the late 1800s. But nonetheless, that's just exactly what has taken place, hasn't it? Now, we will acknowledge that the volume of gathering that has been going on during the harvest, on an average, it has steadily been decreasing. But you know, as long as just one member is on earth, that member is to hold the banner of truth up. Well, what about the bundling? What about the burning? Again, we say that first generation in the harvest, they would have had an absolute zero limit of patience with anyone who would have told them at that time that in the year of 1996, the vine of the earth would not yet be thrust into the great winepress. Now, do you see any similarity here between living during the harvest time and Abraham's life after God told Abraham Sarah would have a son? You know, Abraham never knew when that son would be born. Yet he was capable of waiting. He would have waited until he was 200 years old for it to happen, if that's what was necessary. His faith, his patience would not have changed. Now, we're told this very thing about ourselves. We're told this in this 14th chapter, in verse 12, when John says, "Here is the patience of the saints. They keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus." Now, God tells us that in the harvest, he is going to gather, he's going to bundle, he's going to burn. After which, we're elsewhere told, there's going to be a still small voice, and then God's Spirit is going to be poured out on all flesh. Well, just like Abraham didn't stagger in unbelief, but rather he was patient, well, likewise, we find our test of faith in this last hour period of time that we're living in. It not only requires faith, it also requires an exhibition of the patience, the likes of which only the 144,000 overcomers have. It is the patience that should be manifested right now. And that patience is the very patience that any glorified saint would have manifested whenever they were called upon to do so. It is the patience that recognizes that God does tell us some things that he's going to do. Like he tells us that he will gather, he will bundle, he will burn. And then he stops explaining. He doesn't give any more detail. He doesn't tell us the moment in time when these events conclude. Now, God doesn't want us to know this. And not only that, we know that God doesn't want us to know these things. But yet we are confident that everything is proceeding just exactly as God has planned. Now, brother, at this point, we like to speak in very plain, simple words. And we like to say, what the risen Lord is telling us in this 14th chapter when he says that we should be patient as we keep God's commandments and we maintain the faith of Jesus Christ. What he is saying is primarily none of us, as we are living during the harvest time, none of us knows when the final phase of the hour of temptation takes place. None of us know when the earth is to be cast into the winepress. We don't know when that final phase of trouble transpires. In fact, it's been taking a much longer period of time for this to happen than it was ever thought to be the case. But that's the test of faith that he speaks of. Patience enters in as the description of the only one that can pass the test of faith. It is only those who have the patience of Jesus Christ that are able to cheerfully endure. Now, this is one of our similarities with Abraham. We don't know when the climax of the final judgment takes place with this present order. You know, up to our present moment in time, this event, it's failed everyone's expectation as to when it's going to happen. You know, when the risen Lord had John write the book of Revelation, we feel there was kind of a little dialogue going on between the two of them as that transpired. And we feel when they got to this point of the record, the master said something to the effect, shall we say, in paraphrasing, what we think was the case. He said, you know, John, I know that this event, this final phase event, it's going to exceed everyone's expectation. But that's the way I'm going to test everyone's faith at that time. And also, John, I'm satisfied that absolutely everyone at that time will be able to pass this test. They're going to be able to pass it if they patiently use their one lifetime up in the way that I've instructed them to use that life. And I gave those instructions when I was here on earth performing my earthly ministry. Now that's the message there. And so we ask the question, which set of instructions are we going to follow? Well, going to another consideration, we were struck by the fact that that Jesus, during his whole 3 1/2 year ministry, he really only utilized the word 5281 or hoponymy. He only used it 2 times in illustrating the means by which we can be successful in obedience. Now, of course, it's the manner in which he does this in these 2 texts that really is all that is necessary in order to illustrate how he believed that his followers would be obedient. Now, the 2 texts are in Luke, and we're only going to consider 1 text. The other text is Luke 8:15. The text that we're going to consider is a text of only 7 words. It's Luke 21:19, when the master said, "In your patience possess ye your souls." Now, this text doesn't even appear in any of the other Gospels. And it's no accident that it appears here. Luke is revealing a facet of obedience which is seldom considered to be absolutely vital in order for each saint to be obedient. Now, I know, some of us can say, "Oh, come on right now, let's face it. I don't have any problem with patience, that's no problem for me at all." But we would ask, just how many of us take the time to consider how patience is the heart and soul of being obedient? Now, we in times past, we've explained what being called of God is. We said that it happens to only those who believe God to be the supreme being of the universe, and that he transferred the life of his son to earth in order for him to be a ransom for Adam. Now, everyone must not only believe the ministry of Jesus, but they also must believe in his death and in his resurrection. And for everyone that believes all of this, and they have this belief sink down into their hearts, well, they have the proper faith then to say, "May thy will be done in my life." And these individuals, they are the ones that are released from Adamic condemnation, and they are begotten of the Holy Spirit. And each one of these individuals are really miracles of grace. They understand that there's going to be a resurrection of the dead, and every being that's ever lived, they're going to have the opportunity for everlasting life. And while each one understands restitution and its blessings, it should never be forgotten for a moment that they're the only ones in all the world that believe this in the fullest and most correct sense of the word. And what's overwhelming about all of this is the fact that every single prophet of God has identified restitution in its different aspects. But yet it just hasn't registered with anyone except God's household. And not only has restitution registered with the called of God class, restitution is what gives purpose to every spirit-begotten soul's consecration. And the appreciation of this factor, it's enhanced when we recognize what our master meant when he said, "In your patience possess ye your souls." Now, this patience that the master is talking about, it's completely based upon having the same understanding that Jesus had during his ministry. Jesus didn't do any restitution work during his first advent. No one was permanently healed. No one was permanently restored to life. But nevertheless, when Jesus during his first advent, looked out upon all humanity at that time. Well, Jesus not only saw the picture of everyone getting the opportunity for everlasting life. Besides this, Jesus saw how. He saw just exactly how everyone was going to be restored. And it won't be just getting resurrected into the world, into a wonderful condition in the world of no more sickness, pain, and sorrow. No, each individual in the kingdom is going to be restored by the due process of God, through his messengers, of course, because it's going to be God's own personal family that'll be doing the work. And so we say, because it's God's plan, God is going to hand feed each individual in the kingdom in such a personal manner that every experience that fallen humanity has had during these past 6,000 years of their falling down the broad road to destruction, well, all of these experiences are going to be utilized for good. You know, specific segments of that knowledge are going to be funneled into each individual's mind. And as this takes place, each one is going to get a segment of those experiences fed into their minds that's going to be the most beneficial for themselves. The segments are going to vary according to each one's deficiency and requirements. But because each one will be had, they'll be hand-fed, really. Because of that, the volume of past experiences that everyone receives is going to be just enough to blot out every impulse that everyone could have for wanting to develop a single thought of being alienated from God. You know, the lesson of sin is going to be made so impressive for each individual in the kingdom that it's never going to exist again in any godlike creature's mind. Now, every spirit-begotten child of God knows this. They know this is going to happen. It's what gives us an inner joy. This is what funnels our hearts and minds, or I should be more specific and say, this is really what fuels it, you know, just stirs our hearts and minds up in appreciation of God's mercy. Even though we at times may experience physical pain because of our obedience, or at times we may be totally misunderstood by the world, and it would seem no amount of explaining on our part can straighten any situation out, yet we continue to have this inner joy. You know, it makes no difference what our present experiences are, as long as we are submitting ourselves to the Lord. Well, that's all that really matters. And our inspiration is, we're happy to wait for the times of restitution. We're happy to wait for the time when everything is going to be straightened out correctly. The understanding of restitution not only gives purpose to our consecration, it is the sum and substance that gives joy to the life that we now live. Or, stating it like our Master does, this is what gives us the patience of Jesus Christ. It is in our patience that we possess our souls, or we have our eternal destiny fulfilled. Now, we have stated that the hour of temptation is pinpointed to have had its starting point in the Philadelphia period of the church. Now, this hour, it's overlapped into the Laodicean period. And actually, we find during the seventh stage of the church's history, or during the Laodicean period, this period has just been filled with climactic temptations that each one, or each temptation, has been capable of destroying the very destiny of each soul that experiences them. Sifting experiences have constantly been harassing God's household since the Lord returned in 1874. And the sifting continues to take place right to this very moment. And in all of this, it is only those who have the understanding of Jesus Christ, as well as the fact that it is only those who in their own daily lives that benefit from the lessons that are being experienced by the call of God during the dark hour of temptation, well, these are the only ones who they're successful at being patient. They cheerfully endure. They achieve the goal of their destiny. The Master said in Luke 6:21, "Blessed are ye that weep." I left out a word there. It's the most vital word. He said, "Blessed are ye that weep now, for ye shall laugh." Yes, there's sorrow in Zion right now. There's weeping that's taking place. There is pain and suffering that's being experienced right at this very moment. You know, the prophet Isaiah, in the 61st chapter of Isaiah, he gives us our commission of service from God. It applies to the very hour that we're living in now. And the consideration of this complete chapter is, of course, very good homework. We need to periodically review this chapter. But right now we want to ask just one question. Are we fulfilling this commission to the extent that God wants each of us to do it? Because in the third verse of this chapter, we are commissioned to give beauty for ashes to all those who mourn in Zion. Well, there isn't too much activity or very much organized effort being extended towards comforting nominal Zion at the present time. But on the other hand, it's absolutely inexcusable for any of us to relax in our efforts to comfort spiritual Zion. So as we all labor together, or as we suffer together, or as we weep together, the time for God-like laughter, or the time for total delight, that's still future. Right now, we all must be united in lockstep, supporting God's elect on this side of the veil, as the devil still continues to try to sift us. Well, now we'd like to conclude with the Master's own words as found in John 8:31 and 2, when he says, "If you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Now, we who are living in the time of the end period, we recognize we have this freedom that the truth produces. We have this because we responded to the Lord knocking at our hearts. We have opened the door to our hearts as wide as possible, and he's supping with us. Well, actually, what he's doing is he is providing the meat in due season. And because of his providences, we can be a blessing in God's sight. Because of his providences, we can have the patience of Jesus Christ. May the Lord add his blessings.